And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast, this being your breakdown edition as we talk about North Dakota State's home victory over Youngstown State on Saturday, a 24-3 victory. And joining me, as always, is co-host Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. Monday night before the presidential election, of course, so the world is going to exist for at least 24 more hours.
Yeah, the amount of flaming hot takes, if you are on the Twitter machine tomorrow, is going to be absolutely scorching. So I'm going to be enjoying seeing that. But let's get into it. To start off here, things, Ross, you were at Coach Kleiman's press conference this morning. Looks like the A topic being the Bison are going to be without one of their best defensive linemen here for the rest of the season.
Yeah, been a tough season for the Bison. Historically, at least recently, pretty lucky as far as injuries go. I think that the strength and conditioning staff has a lot to do with that. But, you know, not a team that has had to play without multiple stars for extended periods of time. And now I would certainly say that they are in a situation where they're down two of their best three defensive players, and neither of them are coming back this season. They, you know, whether or not they could get DeLuca back for a playoff run or for, you know, any sort of national championship run is something that's not happening because it's not in his best interest. And quite frankly, for next year's team, it's a very valuable thing to have Nick around. And Tangway's not coming back either. I think Bison fans will remember the Grant Olson situation in which he tore an ACL and was an interior defender at middle linebacker and kind of, you know, a guy kind of going one direction. So they had him back in Frisco with a knee brace on, you know, giving them some snaps even with a ACL that wasn't fully healed. But Grant Olson was very, very good college player that was never going to play in the NFL, and he was a senior. So for him to strap his knee together and play in the national championship game was a big deal for him personally. And Tangway is a guy that's probably going to play on Sundays and definitely needs to get ready for next season. So there is no light at the end of the tunnel for the 2016 season for DeLuca or Tangway, and it's just a tough position to be in if you're the Bison when you consider – you know, that those two kind of build that defense from the inside out. And Tangway's ability to take up blocks and DeLuca's ability to clean up after him are both, well, not gone, but, I mean, they're not going to be done at as high a level as they were before.
So before we talk a little bit more injury news, let's talk about some offensive lineman player of the week awards that went out to Mr. Austin Kuhnert. Six knockdowns and 100% grading assignment against Youngstown State as his offensive line was able to average 7.5 yards a carry for their backs, 240 net yards on the ground. What did you think about Kuhnert's performance on Saturday?
I thought it was, you know, particularly impressive from Austin. He's an important player. The center position, I think, is maybe a little bit underrated. And he has a lot of responsibilities, especially against an athletic team like Youngstown that likes to do as many different things as Pelini likes to do. He certainly has a more complex defense than they run at North Dakota State. That certainly doesn't mean it's a better defense. There's just more stuff going on. And Austin Kuhnert had to take care of that. And so for him to play that well under the circumstances is good news for the Bison going forward as they attempt to get a little bit healthier on offense moving toward the playoff run.
So we mentioned those running backs already, and with no King Frazier, no Bruce Anderson, this rushing offense was still able to do some things on the ground. But is there any update on Bruce or King?
I would anticipate Frazier being back more likely than Bruce. Bruce, I guess, still has a chance to play, but you have to keep in mind that if they are able to win these last two games without him, they will certainly, obviously, be seeded. I think I and a number of other folks will tell you that they'll be one of the top two seeds, and I'll have home field playoffs throughout. But they'd be guaranteed one of the top eight seeds, and that means they won't have to play on Thanksgiving weekend. So if they can get through the next 2 weeks without having to use Bruce, they will get that bonus week in there, and he's, you know, certainly, hopefully, going to be ready to go then, and they'd have him fresh for the playoff run, whether that's as a kick returner where he made such an impact in last season's playoff run, or if it's just as a little bit more out of the backfield. He's still, you know, leading the Bison in yards per carry, and is a guy that, you know, we have had no shortage of nice things to say about on this podcast, no question about that.
Well, today's podcast is going to be dedicated a lot to the football side of things, but just a reminder for folks, there are a couple of Bison basketball games this weekend, and I believe press conferences are going to be starting up here again soon. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. And with just kind of as disheveled as things were over the last two seasons, with everything being in the Shields Arena, you have to, I guess, kind of understand that the media end of things was a little bit disorganized. Part of that, I think, certainly, I have an opinion that the local media doesn't do basketball really the service that it deserves until football season is completely over, and even at that point, really not until late February and March. But the travel restrictions, I guess, just kind of where everyone is, led to, you know, kind of Dave and the players just talking to the media kind of whenever they were requested or whenever it worked, and they're going to try and be a little bit more organized this season. I would anticipate this Tuesday press conference thing being a thing in the same way that Coach Kleiman's Monday press conference is a thing, and I think that's only good for the basketball program because it gives fans a time to tune in and know when they're going to get updates on the basketball program. And that press conference, in addition to the Bison basketball show that Brian Sean is doing with Midco, is going to raise, I think, the profile of NDSU basketball in this region, which they do a fine job recruiting the region anyway. But any type of extended media coverage, whether it's a weekly press conference or a dedicated show, is only going to help the profile of the program.
I know that we were talking in the pre-production meeting today, right after the press conference, and you noticed that there were a couple of players missing from the roster that are a little bit surprising. Do you want to mention what you found out there?
Well, I asked, you know, Coach Kleiman if any of the other defensive tackles that hadn't seen the field in that game after Nate Tangway was injured were going to get a chance to play moving forward. And he said, well, those are the four that we have. Otherwise, we'd have to pull a red shirt. And I thought to myself that there's no way that could be true because the staff did such an excellent job of securing those three stud defensive tackles from the Twin Cities area. And lo and behold, I look on the roster to find that Connor Hubbs and Brian Carlton aren't on it anymore. So I don't know what the deal is there. I don't know how long they have been absent from the program. But Kleiman said that those are the four that they have. Those two aren't listed online. And it would appear that the healthy, non-redshirting defensive tackle list is four names long. And that's going to be Blake Williams, Aaron Steidel, Grant Morgan, and then Jack Darnell. And that's what they're going to have to use. Certainly they can use a bigger defensive end like Cole Karch. They're going to use Caleb Butler. And then Bryce Mesner is another guy that played some defensive tackle that they're kind of using on the end of the offensive line as an extra big tight end, but a guy that they certainly could use if they wanted to at the defensive tackle position. So there's depth there, just not as much depth as we really thought.
All right, so let's switch to our Pro Bison update, and obviously we have to start with Mr. Carson Wentz. How did things go for him and the Eagles this weekend for our listeners who haven't had a chance to check out his game?
Very up and down. Set an Eagles rookie passing record with 364 yards, but no touchdowns and two big picks. Wasn't a great game for him, I guess, and also, you know, had a chance to tie the game at the end, and that's twice now that he really has had a chance for one of those big comeback wins like he had so many times at North Dakota State, or I guess maybe not so many times, but just in big moments. Northern Iowa homecoming, Illinois State national championship, games that people remember. And I think that's a really overrated statistic, the fourth quarter comebacks thing. I think it's maybe a little bit overblown, but you'd like to see a quarterback succeed with that chance. And he had it in Detroit. They lost the game on an interception by him, and they lost this game on a fourth down attempt. They're down eight. They would have had to get a touchdown and the two, but unable to come up with the big throw in the closing moment. So a rough, I guess, weekend for Carson, but his name's in the record books, and it will be for quite a while because I don't anticipate the Eagles starting a rookie quarterback for, you know, the next 8, 9, 10, 11 years, however long Carson stays in the league. So impressive, certainly. C.J. Smith did not record a statistic. I do believe he dressed in this one. I would have to double-check that, but his name comes up in the game log on ESPN, so I would assume that means that he was active. It doesn't mean that he played on defense or anything like that, but like I said, failed to record a statistic. Interesting if you got a chance to watch the Chargers or if you have NFL Game Pass and can go and watch it back, but Kyle Emanuel and the Chargers got into a little bit of a shootout with Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans, and Emanuel had to move inside and play inside linebacker for the first time since his redshirting, not redshirt freshman, but his redshirting year at NDSU. He was a linebacker that they moved to defensive end. He played a little bit of linebacker in high school, never played any real off-the-ball linebacker during his time at North Dakota State. So definitely a position switch for him, but he played fine. The Chargers won. He had, I think, three assisted and two solo tackles, so he's in on the action. And another start for the North Dakota State product, so that's good for Kyle and good for the Chargers.
How about a couple of more guys I'm curious for updates on? I did catch a little bit of the Packer versus Colts game, and I'm guessing you're a little bit torn there with Joe Haig. And then I believe there's another former Bison playing right now on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, as we record, Ramon Humber is playing for the Bills on Monday Night Football. Game's probably going to be over by the time you guys hear this, but hopefully you got a chance to watch some primetime Bison. And then I have no recollection of what you're speaking of with Joe Haig. But in all seriousness, Haig was pretty key on the block that I believe it put the Colts up 18 or something like that. Green Bay scored two touchdowns at the end to come within needing a touchdown to win it. The defense kind of fell apart trying to get that last stop to get Rodgers the ball back, and the Colts went into victory formation. But the touchdown that put them up three possessions was a Frank Gore rushing touchdown, and Joe Haig had an absolutely beautiful block that I very much appreciated from his right tackle position, and it was just definitely cool. So if you get a chance to even just watch the highlight of that Frank Gore touchdown, and you can find that anywhere, I mean ESPN, wherever, watch number 73 because he does an outstanding job. Ryan, there were quite a few kids in Fargo that I noticed during the pregame festivities for the Youngstown State contest. What do you have for the people in recruiting time with Ryan Burns?
Yeah, there were quite a few football recruits on campus. I think a majority of the kids that they have committed were there. But the three names to really note here are the three official visitors from this past weekend, and Holden Hotchkiss, the quarterback commit from Lakeland, Florida, Christian Watson, the wide receiver commit from Tampa, Florida, and then a brand-new name that we haven't talked about here a lot in Rayvonte Holt, a defensive tackle from Sacramento. So let's start with the two commitments that were on their official visits from Florida. I've had a chance to briefly touch base with both of them as they're pretty busy trying to get back into the flow of things back down in there in Florida. But both were extremely impressed by their official visits. Again, both guys have been to Fargo before. Holden actually camped with North Dakota State this summer, and that's how he earned his offer. And then Christian took an unofficial visit during the summer. So again, this isn't their first time to campus, but it really reaffirmed a lot of their thoughts, and that's obviously why they're committed. When you talk about a guy like Revonte Holt, again, someone brand new for us anyway, he's got offers from Wyoming, UC Davis, Sacramento State, and Cal Poly coming into the visit. This being his first official visit, the Bison ended up offering him just before he left on Sunday. So as Ross talked about earlier with Connor Hubbs and Brian Carlton no longer on the roster for whatever reason, NDSU is going to be trying to take as many defensive tackle bodies as they can. Revonte fits that to a T. He's 6'4", 260 pounds, and he moves well in space. So I'm trying to get recaps up with all three, but it's for as much as 17- and 18-year-old boys are on their phone, they sure like to not like to talk or text or direct message as much as they may seem. So working on having those stories up tomorrow or Wednesday at the latest. But yes, very busy time, a couple of new names, and the Florida commits come all the way up to Fargo for this game, and they saw a heck of a game. So let's get into this Youngstown State game, Ross. And it was just a strange game. I mean, NDSU goes up 17-0 early, but they just really couldn't get anything going for the majority of the game. Time of possession tells a different story, but just a strange game.
Certainly was. Because of that red zone defense and because of NDSU's propensity to turn the opposing team over, this was a game that looked like a kind of a destruction on the scoreboard. But really, and Pelini talked about it a little bit in the post-game press conference, you know, a couple plays here and there, you've got a decent chance. And another strange thing that happened as well was, I got to tell you, it has been a long time since I've seen a coach successfully ice the kicker. And Kleiman was absolutely able to do that at the end of the first half. And I just thought I'd make mention of that because, you know, as much fun as people make of icing the kicker, me absolutely included in that, they snapped the ball. He made the kick. Kleiman had called timeout. They ran him back out there, snapped the ball, wide left. Crowd goes nuts. Bison maintain a 17-3 lead going into halftime. So, like you said, a weird game. The statistics, the box score, I don't think really tells the whole story, and that was evident throughout.
So when we do look at the box score, it's just a strange thing to look at in terms of, I believe that NDSU lost the time of possession by at least 10 minutes, and Youngstown State ran 70 plays compared to North Dakota State's 44, yet North Dakota State's able to 8X the amount of points on the scoreboard, and that's really the only thing that matters. But it's just, again, it's just a strange event when you look at the box score.
Certainly is. I mean, more historically, you see NDSU in these games that they dominate, first of all, I mean, time of possession for sure, but, you know, total yardage, rushing yardage, they did, of course, do better in the rushing yardage part of it than Youngstown State did, but just what this would normally tell you would be, you know, a game that NDSU either struggled to win or didn't win historically. And they, as you mentioned, they scored eight times as many points. And I know that, you know, that just really means winning by three touchdowns in a low scoring game. But it was certainly more or less, I guess, less futile from Youngstown State than that final score would project. And I think that's a team that Kleiman kind of hopes he doesn't have to see again.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about this Youngstown State offense. And we knew this coming in. We talked about it on the preview show. This Youngstown State offense is just struggling, especially at the quarterback position. Hunter Wells, 222 yards with an interception. It's just this Youngstown State offense, until they can figure out some things on that side of the ball, I don't know that they can be seriously thought of as a serious contender here in the Missouri Valley.
No, I think I would agree with that. I don't think that, you know, we said, or at least I said on the last podcast, when you have more than one quarterback, it means you actually don't have a quarterback. And,
right.
And I am a huge, you know, quarterback fan. I think it's the most important position in sports. I think it's more important than even people realize to have a quality signal caller. And Youngstown State just doesn't have one. I mean, they struggle so mightily to get behind one, which is honestly part of the issue. And then, you know, at the same time, they did have the issue of an injury as well. I mean, they had to use Nathan Mays a few times just because of how beat up Hunter Wells was getting. Mays didn't seem ready to go. Ricky Davis was not part of that game at all. But when you're trying to go through three different QBs, you're not going to have a successful offense. And I really don't care how close the competition is. If you feel like you have to do it that way, you're just setting yourself up to fail. And I don't know what's going on with that staff. I think you have to pick a quarterback and design an offense around him, because football teams need that leadership and that stability, no matter how good or bad the player is.
So let's talk a little bit about that Bison red zone defense that really came to play. I mean, they stiffened up in the red zone more than a few times, and it ended up working out, as you said, because the kickers plural for Youngstown State, didn't have a tremendous game. They made one of three field goals. Only one good was a 32-yarder, and they missed two from 34 and 29. But that's, I mean, when you look at this game and why it is so lopsided, NDSU is able to stiffen up in the red zone, and instead of them being able to get, you know, three touchdowns, they only come away with 3 points. I think that's a huge part and a huge credit to this Bison defense.
No question about it. I think I read that North Dakota State has given up a touchdown on 6 of 26 attempts in the red zone, which is just phenomenal. And the fact that college kickers are so bad, the fact that they seem to actually have a pretty good field goal block unit, just adds to how important it is for them to force those field goal attempts. And it's kind of a point of pride for Kleiman as well, as far as he's concerned. He really doesn't even care if your field goals go in or not. He feels like if he forces you to kick field goals all day long, his offense is going to get you. And so it doesn't really matter to him if they go in or not, because NDSU is not going to lose a game because the opposing team is kicking field goals. You know, have there been more dominant Bison defenses in the past, yardage-wise, even just limiting even those red zone possessions? Yeah, certainly. But red zone defense seems to be a calling card of this particular season's unit, and I'm very impressed. I was, you know, when I'm down on the field, the Fargo Dome has very little room between the sidelines and the stands. I don't like weeding through the traffic. I don't like being on the team's benches, so I pretty much stick, you know, on either side of the 20. I'm seeing a lot of the red zone defense from 15, 16 yards away, and NDSU plays fast. They play discipline, and the front seven specifically, I think, takes a little bit of a step up. The front four puts more pressure, it seems like, when their backs are against the wall than you would see on just a normal play between the 20s, because those quarterbacks don't have much time, and the defensive backs are able to get really aggressive when they have got that back line as a 12th defender.
So speaking of that secondary, let's talk a little bit about Jalen Wimbush. 10 total tackles, a tackle for loss, one pass breakup. The sophomore from Florida absolutely came to play. Do you think that was his best game of the season?
I really do. I was very impressed with Jalen's work all day. I've continued to tout his ability to tackle. I think his background as a safety really instilled the need to get guys on the ground. I asked him after the game if he felt like this was just the defensive backs in general, their best tackling game, because to my eyes it was, and he said, yes, this is something we've been focusing on. This is something that the staff has been harping on. We know we need to tackle better. It's been obvious to us, and this was a good game, and I thought he was everywhere. That dropped interception of his happened about 20 feet away from me, and it was just the inability to control it to the ground. But it was a beautiful read. It was an excellent job of utilizing the strengths of NDSU's scheme as it pertains to, I guess, plays that happen that close to the back line. They were in a cover two, and the safety was there, so he knew he had a free run to the back line to try and make that interception, and it was almost a huge play. I think that they might have gone empty anyway in that trip down there, but I was really impressed with Jalen's work all day long.
Let's talk a little bit about that Bison offense, specifically the passing offense. Easton Stick on the day, he only threw the ball 12 times, but in that being said, he only completed 6 passes of those 12, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Are you starting to potentially start to sound the alarm here about this Bison passing offense, or do you, or where are you standing right now with this Bison passing offense?
I mean, I'm not sounding any alarm, but I just wish things were going better when you consider the way that the season started for Easton. I still have confidence that the Bison can win a national championship with Easton Stick as the QB. I have confidence that by the time he's a senior, he's going to be one of the better, more important players in FCS. But he's going through a little bit of an adjustment period right now, it seems like, where he's maybe not playing as well as he has in the past. And that interception, that was something that was avoidable. He had made the right read. They had the right play call. And he just underthrew his man. Darius Shepherd had his man beat deep. The free safety would not have been able to make that play. If he throws it 4 yards further, it's a touchdown. If he throws it 7 yards further, it's an incomplete pass. But to throw it where he threw it, and that was a hell of a play by the free safety. Very athletic play, very impressive. But that was basically the only place that he could throw that pass to get it picked. So I don't have really a problem with the decision-making process on that one. It was just a physical error. And you're starting to see more and more of those. And what worries me specifically, I guess, about that one is that it was underthrown. And Easton Stick has had a pretty consistent miss that's been high. So for him to underthrow a guy that badly, I think he's in his own head a little bit and needs to have, I think, a kind of get healthy game. Fortunately, it's the 2-5 Indiana State Sycamores coming into Fargo. And if Polisek so chooses to get his young quarterback in a rhythm early and often to kind of usher him into the playoffs, I think that would be potentially a good thing for the Bison for the rest of the season.
So let's talk a little bit about the running offense, but the only thing I really want to talk about there is Chase Morlock on that power. Fantastic pull by the left guard there, and then right tackle is able to wash down 2 guys, and by the time the pull gets to the hole, Chase is already through it, and he's off to the races for 71 yards. That is beautiful execution there by the entire Bison offense.
Yeah, former NDSU safety Christian Dudzik called it God's play on Twitter.
That's fantastic.
That was power, how you're supposed to run it, and they run it, and they run it, and they run it, and the fans complain about them running it on every play or on every series, and then bang, that's what happens, and it's a low-risk player. It's at least supposed to be a low-risk play, but when it goes for 71 yards, that's a hell of a reward. Had to really appreciate Chase and his kind of self-deprecating brand of humor in the post game there, talking about sprinting down the field, watching the big screen, so he knew he didn't get caught because of his lack of breakaway speed. But this is a kid with a 60-plus yard touchdown against a Big 12 team. To his credit, I don't think that his 40 time is really an issue. But good for Chase. Had got one called back earlier this season on account of his helmet falling off, which was incredibly unfortunate. And just that was kind of something that he'd been waiting on, and honestly something that this offense had been waiting on all season long. Power is such a staple and has led to big gains in the past for NDSU, and it hadn't been there this season, that big breakaway run out of power or even the outside G. Good for the Bison, good for the run offense to get an explosive play, and it really changed the complexion of that game. Youngstown State's not a team that knows what to do down 7 or down 10, and they were down 7 and 10 right away.
Yeah, so let's switch back to Youngstown State on offense. I know a guy that we talked about a lot in the preview show, one of your favorite guys in the Missouri Valley, Mr. Jody Webb. He only has 10 carries for 43 yards and a couple of catches for 25 yards. But I can tell you that this Bison defense is not going to miss Jody Webb.
No, they're not. And great job of gang tackling, because as much as I lauded the team's effort tackling on Saturday, they did not get him to the ground right away. And that's something that is to be expected with a player of his caliber. And you're right. I mean, I don't think anybody in green and yellow is going to miss Jody Webb. That was really good running on his part yet again. But a conscious effort, I felt like, when he had the ball in his hands, even when he was on the field, just for the Bison defenders to be paying attention to him and making sure that bad things didn't happen.
Speaking of some more young South State players on offense, let's talk a little bit about Darian Townsend. 7 receptions for 98 yards. All that having a big game for him didn't equate to points for the Penguins. And that also didn't happen with Jalen Allison shadowing. But what were your impressions of the Youngstown State receiver?
Boy, was I impressed. I thought he was a good player. Got open, which is not always easy. But when the ball was in his hands, he was effective as well. If they could ever get that kid a quarterback, I think he would be quite a threat in the Valley. Thought he was a very good athlete. Just was very impressed with him, his ability to make guys miss, his ability to break tackles, but just the ability to get open. He's not a real, real big guy. Not, you know, physically imposing, probably not going to high point a lot of footballs, but he didn't need to because he was so successful in getting open. And then once he got the ball in his hands, he was successful in making guys miss and getting extra yards. So I just was really impressed with Townsend. And you'll see that when the film review piece comes out, either later this evening or right away in the morning, because he makes a number of plays in this particular game that I felt were impressive.
And unfortunately for NDSU fans and just college football fans across the country, there was no Pelini freakout. But I know you were at the post-game presser, and there were some interesting comments there.
Yeah, Bo was pretty calm from a Bo perspective. I actually got a chance to ask him a question, which was just sort of on my bucket list for the day. Don't know. I don't know how long I anticipate Pelini being on Youngstown staff. If he's there when they play here again in 2018, I guess maybe I'd see that as a little bit of a surprise. So while he was around, I figured I'd ask him something. But he wasn't as animated as you might think, losing by 3 touchdowns. It was a little bit more despondent than I was ready for. But, man, it was ominous for the offense. I'd be interested to look at anything out of from Twitter or anything like that from the Youngstown beat guys, because I would not have felt comfortable if I were an offensive player. I would not have felt comfortable if I were an offensive coordinator or anyone on the offensive staff, because he, you know, made comments about not being good enough on offense, needing to make changes on offense. At one point, I think he said you'd be surprised how much we're going to change on offense this week. I think he's had it, and that's a guy with a pretty darn short fuse. So, like I said, I would not feel real great about being a coach or an athlete on Youngstown State's offense, because I think everybody on that side of the ball's jobs are at stake, and that's sometimes what you get with a guy like Pelini, which is a high level of accountability for everyone.
So before we wrap things up here tonight, let's talk a little bit about Nate Tangway again. Again, what do you think the Bison will do with, now that the news again that he's out for the season? How do you see things playing out there on the defensive line?
Well, I think there are a few bright spots. First thing we talked about, you know, when DeLuca went down, was schematic things. And I felt like, you know, thank God they're finally going to let that 33 nickel defense rest, because they wanted to keep PGT and DeLuca and MJ all on the field at the same time. It was a good idea in theory, but that particular scheme is just asking to get beat with 3-man rushes. So DeLuca went out. They go back to the 42 nickel. They use Stumpf. They use Tucker. And the pass defense improved. Now I think that they're pretty much done, in my opinion, playing teams that can really threaten them running the football. That'll, of course, potentially change with the playoffs, but as you move away from the Valley, really, in my opinion, the teams that can hurt you running the ball are pretty much gone. And the teams that really scare me, or should scare you if you're an NDSU fan in the playoffs, all try to throw the ball to score. Whether you're talking about South Dakota State, whether you're talking about Eastern Washington, you know, any of those types of schools, Richmond even, got teams that you know are potentially good. I'm not really scared of Jacksonville State or Sam Houston State. I think that those are okay teams in very, very weak conferences that have inflated ratings. But the teams that are going to really be a threat to North Dakota State are an Eastern Washington team that forced overtime in the Fargo Dome and a South Dakota State team that won in the Fargo Dome. And I think what those two teams bring to the table is an ability to throw the ball. Now, I think you're going to have a situation where Christian is going to be scouted on the QB run. I don't think that they're going to be able to do that against NDSU again, but they still have Wenicke and Goddard. And what's going to happen on passing downs now, because Tangway is gone and they're missing that interior pass rusher that played 55 snaps a game, they're going to have to come up with different pressure packages and use different personnel. You're definitely going to see, I can guarantee you, Caleb Butler in a inside rush roll and nickel. I think you might see Greg Menard get a little bit of work inside. I think Cole Karch, who's a big, big defensive end, a redshirt freshman from the Wisconsin area that they planned on using this season but just hasn't been able to crack what is an extremely deep defensive end rotation. He's going to get a chance to play some of those interior snaps and obvious passing situations. I think that the four defensive tackles that they have are not going to miss a beat in run defense. And that's not being disrespectful to Nate Tangway at all. He's a very good player. But those four guys are good players too, and they're big kids, and I think they're going to be fine. His ability to basically not allow you to single block him in the pass rush game from the interior is what's going to be missed. But I think it gives the NDSU staff an opportunity to be more creative with the way that they get after the quarterback. And that could potentially be a good thing in the same way that going back to the 42 nickel was a good thing.
So do you want to give folks a preview of what the content that you'll be putting up here on the Bison Report for the rest of the week?
Yeah, this is the part of the podcast where I promise that the basketball preview is coming out.
Sometime.
Yeah, I swear. Not a huge deal. Like I said, the first game's on Friday, and I want it to be good. It was well-received last season, and I think it will be good. Because of some other obligations, I wasn't able to get the film review out on Monday morning as it is normally out. That's something that's going to be, I would say, definitely within 12 hours of you listening to this podcast, the film review is going to be something that's available to you. And then I've made a number of requests for NDSU student athletes. We should have a couple of interviews for this Friday show. Ryan should have his piece with an Indiana State beat writer coming out. I'm sure something that he's already talked to, because I think this is a common opponent with Minnesota. And I'm going to have the Indiana State preview coming out later in the week.
So that's going to be a little bit of a rundown of what we will have on the Bison Report for this upcoming week. So plenty of content for you to dig into as the Bison take on Indiana State this weekend. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening to this breakdown edition of the Bison Report Radio, and go Bison.